Okay, so this is gonna be weird. This is already weird. Where are we looking? Hi, and welcome to What the Phalange, the podcast where we watch every episode of Friends, discuss it, deconstruct it, and fan over it one episode at a time.
My name is Emily, pronouns she and her.
And my name is Quinn, pronouns zizier or they them.
This week, we're talking about Season 1, Episode 15, The One with the Stoned Guy. It aired on February 16th, 1995. It was written by Jeff Greenstein and Jeff Strauss, and it was directed by Alan Meyerson.
In this episode, Joey helps Ross with his dirty talking, Chandler struggles to figure out what he's doing with his life, and Monica gets hired as an executive chef only to find out the owner of the restaurant gets obnoxiously high.
All right, let's get started. So, how did you feel about this episode?
Overall, I feel like we've sort of like started to get to know the characters a little bit more. I think that there's sort of like a little bit of a demonstration on like how they like will shift jokes in this episode, depending on like who's the center of attention or who the storyline is following.
Interesting.
I also want to point out that Marcel is back. Ross gets Marcel as a pet monkey 5 episodes ago. We don't talk about him once from then until now.
Yeah.
And then now he showed up again.
No, they talked about it in the second episode, too.
But right, yeah.
Now they'll consistently talk about him till
Katie, the end of the season. Katie's the monkey actor.
The actor who plays the monkey.
Actually is in 9 episodes overall.
Oh, sad. Marcel.
Marcel. Oh, Katie.
We've talked about forever.
How about you? What are your initial thoughts of this episode?
Yeah, I think I had, like, my surface feelings about it. You know, I was like, oh, this is, like, a really funny, chill episode. And then, like, of course, go into research mode and I start, like, thinking a little bit deeper about a couple of different things. And, like, I definitely enjoy the way in which they portray the male friendships in this. Like, I think there's, like, a lot of good support and, like, a lot of non-toxic masculinity going on.
Right.
Except for a couple of key moments. There's always some key moments with Joey and his toxic masculinity. And then I do, like, I really think that Chandler's struggle is very real and very relatable. And
right, like, especially right now.
But not even necessarily, like, yeah, I think that there's just, like
for millennials and the pandemic, you know.
Yeah, there's just, like, this really, anyway, we'll get into it when we get into it. But, okay, first thing I want to talk about is choosing dreams versus choosing stability and money. I want to talk about the decriminalization of marijuana, and nice. I want to talk about Joey's secure masculinity, and that's what I want to talk about today.
Awesome. Okay, well, I talked about one that I already wanted to talk about, which was Katie.
Okay.
I also wanted to talk about drugs. That's right, kids.
Nice.
And then, okay, I just need to talk about Phoebe as a massage therapist, because I am a massage therapist. And I've been holding it back a little bit, but now we're starting to like see Phoebe in her job, and I just need to talk about it.
That's fair. Totally fair. Okay, before we start though, I want to bring up something that I've been wanting to bring up since I messed up. The season 1, episode 12 episode. Okay. I was doing research about, you know, they're at the beginning, they're like humming that song.
Yes.
And they're like, do, 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 do. No, that was the second song they sang.
Right.
The first one is, of course, now I can't remember what it is. Anyways, it doesn't matter. So we said it was the Odd Couple theme song, right? And it's a show from the 70s or 60s or 70s.
Right. You initially said that they did not redo the show.
Well, they redid the show. And I'm so silly because I actually have watched this show. I've watched it because it stars Matthew Perry, who plays Chandler.
Oh, right.
So they did a reboot of this show. Okay. It stars Chandler. And so in 1995, when he's sitting there on the couch singing this song, in like 25 years or 20 years, he actually has the same theme song for a show he's in. Isn't that wild?
It's so meta.
very meta.
So the universe foreshadowing.
I wrote a note. I was like, how dare I forget this? So now.
So okay. Along with correcting ourselves, let's add a few different little, this is what we're doing right now. So we have a campaign going right now on Instagram. Mm. So if you don't follow us on Instagram yet, go follow us on Instagram. We basically have a giveaway going. We have a few different prizes, but the main one that I really am in love with is that we designed a mug with our logo on it. And if you give us a written review on Apple Podcasts and tag a friend on the contest post saying, I think you would love this podcast because you finish the sentence, you get an entry to win one of our prizes. Now, this is going on for how long, Emily?
This is going on for 2 weeks. So it ends at 11:59 p.m. on Monday, October 12th.
And that's what's known as the Thanksgiving holiday up in this side of the borders.
The side of the borders.
In the area of the world that people call Canada. So, cold open.
Cold open.
Go.
Set the scene. Monica accidentally, or Rachel accidentally puts the pencil in her cup instead of the cinnamon stick.
Right.
And I think that this is well done. Like, they're deliberate. Like, they've been showing from the beginning that Rachel's terrible at being a waitress. Absolutely horrible. And then later on, we're in this moment where Monica has to pick between Rachel or someone who she knows who's competent at being a waitress to, like, help her get a job. And Monica's in this really, like, uncomfortable position where, obviously, to her, she picks someone who's, like, more professional because it's Monica. But, like, I think they did a good job at showing the scene, again, where Rachel's incompetent. Not incompetent. That's kind of harsh. But
it's a little harsh. But like, yeah, where it's like, it definitely is giving reason as to why Monica wouldn't choose
her. Yeah, and she does it specifically to Monica.
I know, right? Monica's disgusted.
Yeah, and I think the writers, like, really plan that out properly.
I love how when we did the Netflix watch party and our patron Rachel was watching with us, and she was like, I wouldn't drink that out of fear of lead poisoning, which is, you know, along with also all the bacteria on a pencil, yes, it is a health concern, yeah. That's for sure.
For sure, because she stores it behind her ears. Like, how clean are your behind your ears? I want to clean mine behind my ears now, you know?
I think that behind my ears is cleaner than a lot of other parts of my body.
Okay, this is gross.
Like, well, I mean, your hands... Okay, I don't go rubbing the backs of my ears on, like, money and handles, you know?
When was the last time you touched a handle or money outside of this home in the last 7 months?
Okay, we're talking about the real world. They're not in COVID quarantine.
The real world, okay? Not the pandemic. Illusional world.
This is the real world.
Welcome to the real world. It sucks. You're gonna love it. Let's hit an advertisement.
Yes. Okay, so you guys, as you know, we're doing a lot to try to support the process of creating this project and continuing on for you guys. You know, we've had a few different people basically message us and be like, you have to do season two.
Yeah.
And you know what? We agree. We definitely agree.
We do have to do season two. But we also need to afford season two.
Yes.
So
if you're not aware, this podcast is actually costing us money. And not only that, it's costing us a lot of time. So what we're trying to do is insert some affiliate marketing. So essentially today we're going to be talking about Instacart, which means that if you use our affiliate link that will be in the description below or in the show notes, you basically just click on that. And if you sign up for Instacart, with a paid account, we will get a commission. We're trying to not only choose things that are practical, but also things that we don't have too much of, you know, beef with ethically. Yeah. We definitely think that Instacart is a really great option for people today. It's not available in Quebec, but we have lots of Ontario listeners, and we have lots of listeners in the U.S., and Instacart is available there. Sign up for a paid account. We will get a kickback. It does not make the product more expensive for you. And when you get a paid account, you get access to groceries delivered to your home, which is probably the best thing to do right now in the middle of COVID. Not only that, but you can also send family and friends groceries as well. So if you have parents that you're looking after that you want to keep safe, you can send them groceries.
Stay home, order your groceries.
Yeah. and use Instacart and use our affiliate link. One last announcement. If you are listening to this as a podcast, be aware that now we are also on YouTube. And if you are watching us on YouTube, be aware that we are a podcast. Okay. We are not a morning show.
Okay, moving on. We're in Chandler's office.
Yes, so we're in Chandler's office, and I'm really loving this getting outside of the friend circle and seeing people within their, like, their lives separate from the friends and, like,
and the
what
people
they
have
do.
To deal with them.
Yeah, so, like, we saw, like, Joey at the theater. We've seen Phoebe at her, massage clinic, if you could call it that. I don't have any beef, I'm fine. We've seen Monica at her restaurant.
That's true. Well, we see Rachel at her work every day.
Yeah, we see Rachel at work all the time.
And we've seen Ross at the museum, actually, too, in the second episode.
That's true. And I just really appreciate really sort of, like, rounding out these characters a little bit. Because now we see Chandler at work. And he's not very good at what he does.
Clearly. I really sympathize with Chandler. As someone who's, like, done quite a lot of, like, data entry, sit at a computer, kind of typed keyboards, I feel that. That feeling of, like, let me just drink my coffee and just continue to type with one hand because it's just, like, very mundane, basic work. And in a lot of ways, like, I have a love-hate relationship with that kind of work because in so many ways you can, like, completely turn off your brain and just be, like, in your work and, like, it's almost, like, repetitive and becomes almost, like, meditative? It sounds weird, but it's true.
Yeah.
Meditative. But then on the flip side, it's also incredibly mundane and incredibly boring and makes your hopes and dreams fall into a pit of despair. So, you know, you pick what you can. But I want to say a little
fun
fact.
But money's great.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Which we will get into.
Anyone who ever said that money cannot buy happiness was wrong. Just saying.
Wow, that's a statement. That's a bold statement.
Well, I mean, like, money can buy a lot of things, including in the States, healthcare, therapy. It can buy your basic needs. And the thing is that a lot of the time, you need a lot of those things in order to have and sustain good mental health.
Right. I would argue not that money can buy happiness, but having your basic needs met as a human being can buy happiness.
And in this system, money is what meets your basic needs.
And in conclusion, capitalism doesn't buy happiness. All right, moving on. Okay, the woman who speaks to Chandler here, the woman who has an excellent sleeve length, which Chandler says to her. So she actually, fun fact, plays, and she's an extra, right? And she actually plays four different characters throughout all 10 seasons of Friends.
Oh, really?
So we will see her again. And this is something I didn't notice. I had to look it up.
I've never noticed that either.
I know, exactly. So now we got to be on the lookout for the next 10 seasons.
Yeah.
Of her showing up again. Yeah.
I also, so we switch over to the next scene, right, where he's coming in and and he's like, made it. I think it's really cute with Phoebe is like, we're going to do this thing. Anyway, Phoebe is so Phoebe in this episode and I really, really love her.
Yeah.
She does such a good job at being, she's very much like a side character in this and she does such a good job at that side character, you know? She just really stands out. What I wrote down as my notes is that it's just too freaking typical that this, like, white, cis, straight guy who literally is causing more of a nuisance in the office and is literally not trying at all somehow gets this giant promotion and given more power just handed to him when there's probably a lot more people in the office working a lot harder and care a lot more than he does.
Okay. In a lot of ways, I agree with you. Okay. But I'm going to put a counterpoint in that And then, like, the next thing, he's saying he was offered this promotion, and then he was like, but I quit because it was supposed to be a temp job. And then Monica's like, yeah, but you've been here for five years, which is basically implying that he hasn't gotten a promotion in 5 years. So I don't know if you could say that he doesn't deserve a promotion.
I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it because
5 years is a long fucking time to work at a job without a promotion.
I mean, he sent out prank newsletters.
Yeah. Look.
I have a sense of humor, but I have a feeling that office does not have a sense of humor. Okay. How is he anyway.
Okay. Totally. We don't know what his job performance is. We know that he, like, is pretty shitty at best, but we also know that he's been working there for 5 years. And personally, I think that if someone's been working in a job for 5 years, they deserve to make a decent wage.
No, I don't disagree with that. But I think that he has been making a decent wage. Anyway, whatever. We could debate this into the ground.
Okay.
What do you think, guys?
Do you think Chandler deserves
a... Anyway, I do think he deserves it, but I just think that it's very typical that...
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Anyway, moving on.
Okay.
The weenus. So, what is a weenus? Well, it's a weekly...
Estimated net usage statistics.
Right. And let's bring our attention to the slang word for the loose skin on your elbow. I don't know if you guys were ever, like, kids and like, people were like, this is your weenus, like, I'm holding on to the flesh of my elbow right now, if this is creeping anyone out. I was told that this is a scientific thing, and I can assure you, with all my anatomy classes, it is not.
Interesting. It's so funny that you say that, because I also teach teen yoga, right? And I was talking about something, and I forget what I was saying. It was a word that started with W, and then I was like, do you guys know what that word is? And then... If we're like, no, but we know what a weenus is. Like, and the class breaks down.
Weenus sounds like penis.
Good one, Quinn. They didn't realize. All right, so Monica's preparing, I guess, for this like meal that she's going to make, right? Is that the idea?
Yes.
Chandler's trying to figure out what the heck he's going to do with his life, because he's going to go take a career aptitude test.
Also, I really like in this scene when he comes in, he's like, can you see my nipples through my shirt?
Yeah.
And later on, we're going to learn some more information about his nipples. So I just think it's kind of funny.
That's true.
That he comes in self-conscious about his nipples.
But aren't you normally, when you wear like a white button-up shirt like that, don't people usually wear like a white tank top underneath or like a white...
Yeah, we know what the word is.
What's the like
the derogatory, like, really effed up term?
No, I know that term, but
that's like, right. I said effed up. Trying to watch my swearing.
Do we want this to not be explicit content?
Well, now that we're on YouTube, if we ever get to a point of getting enough subscribers and being monetized, we can't swear.
We can't swear? Oh yeah. God, that's gonna be life changing.
I know.
Whew, that's fucked up. Anyways, moving on. Right, so we took an aptitude test, which is funny because I then decided that I would take an aptitude test because I want to, it's research, you know?
Okay, yeah, so what's your aptitude test say?
I am suited to be a web designer or web developer.
Yeah, that makes sense.
What?
Sorry.
I don't know.
You're also a very excellent yoga instructor.
Thank you. Whatever. I get it. Basically, then Chandler gets a phone call. If we're following just like the Chandler plot line, Chandler gets a phone call from his work saying that they're going to offer him more and more money, continuously more money, plus a year-end bonus, plus a whole bunch of other
shit. This is a great scene because there's just so much like emotional support from the guys.
Yeah.
As he's like on the phone call and they're there like, what about your dream, man? Your dream.
Yeah. It's so cute. They really want him to like follow his dream, and they're like trying to urge, like, you know, like that tough love that you need from friends.
Like, yeah. Sometimes. Keep it in line with like what it is that you want. Cause it's like, it's so interesting. Like, friends are just such useful tools in our lives.
To remind us what we want when we've lost clarity.
Yeah. You know, like when there's other things presented in front of us, that having them be like, no, that's not what you said that you wanted. Like, remember why you made certain decisions, you know? Yeah. And I think this is a great example of that. It's so cute.
Yeah. And then he decides to take it, which I understand. Like, you live in New York City. Okay. You don't really know what you want to do with your life. You got bills to pay. Rent is only going to get higher. Things are only going to get more expensive, and you're presented with like this really awesome promotion with like, which sounds like a lot of money. Like, honestly, I voted that I would take it.
Yeah.
But our listeners.
Oh yeah. Tell us.
So we had a 50-50 split between.
Oh wow. Yeah, really?
If you were Chandler, would you have quit and followed your dreams or taken the promotion? And we had a direct 50-50 split.
Wow, that's so interesting.
What would you have done? Would you have taken the promotion?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on this side where I think especially what I'm feeling right now in my life is just like the need of something, stability, like some sort of stability. And if it's something that he's been willing to do for the past 5 years, and he has never expressed being particularly miserable doing it. And I think that's what really matters here, is that, like, he's sort of indifferent to it. Like, he wants to be doing something really cool with his life, but it's more for, like, his sense of, like, what he, how he appears to the world.
Yes, I agree with you. And I also feel as though, like, because he doesn't know what he wants to do yet, like, taking this promotion doesn't mean just, like, completely ending following his dreams ever in the future. Like, he's only in his mid-20s, you know? Like,
and, you know, he also has to think of the fact that he has a Joey to support.
Okay, so then we see Chandler's cube, not a cubicle, as Phoebe puts
it. Right? That's such a great, again, play on words, which is Friends' strong point in their writing.
For sure. And then they call in Helen. Helen, would you come in here for a moment?
Helen.
And I would like to say, as someone who has been a Helen, as someone who has spent the last 10 years of my life doing part-time administrative assistant work and being like a secretary slash receptionist, that sucks. Don't call me in just to parade me in front of your friends. Oh, I've also had that happen at my work as a bartender. Oh, life is rough when you're a woman.
And he's going to abuse his power in this role in very unforgivable ways. And this is just like a little preview into it. Again, feel like this is like another thing. Like, should he have gotten this promotion?
We don't know.
Well, like, I don't. Anyway, whatever. We'll talk about this more next episode.
Okay, so let's go into the storyline around
Joey and Ross.
Okay, cool. Ross has a date with a bug lady. I love you, Ross. So, okay. If you watch this episode, bonus points if you recognize who Celia is. Celia is Jan from The Office. So if you don't watch The Office, sorry, this is very boring to you. But if you do watch The Office, she's
such a character in The Office.
So Celia, who wants Ross to dirty talk her, is Jan.
Yeah, which is hilarious because also sense. You just can tell that Celia is Jan, like the character. In my notes, I literally cannot, like, well, first of all, I didn't quite remember that her name was Celia. And so I just kept being like, and Jan is this and that. So I've just, from now on, I'm just referring to her as Jan.
Yeah, that's so funny. I continue to refer to her as Jan in my notes.
And it's funny because I've never actually noticed this before. But then as soon as you pointed it out, I was just like, oh my God. And I just like can't see anything but Jan now.
It's just Jan.
Yeah. She does a great job at that role.
Yeah, she does. Ross doesn't know how to dirty talk. His only sexy word he knows is the word vulva, which is questionable best. And so he gets Joey's help for, well, actually, no, Joey volunteers his help to Ross to help him with dirty talk, which, like, I think that in this episode, I would say that there's no really, like, best lines. There's just, like, really good paragraphs, like, just really good, like, plot, story, funny things going on. Like, this entire scene, Joey's trying to get Ross to talk dirty, and he's, like, they're, like, their backs are to Chandler's room, and then Chandler walks out. Like, this whole scene is so well scripted. I think it's hilarious.
What I actually wrote down in my notes is that the way that they hold the tension in this scene is so perfect. Because I find it's one of those scenes when it starts to happen, if you know what happens, you can't help but just sort of, like, say the line that's coming because it's hilarious. But they do such a good job. Like, no, they sit back and they wait and they let it, like, you marinate in the situation that's happening. I also think it's one of those situations where, like, between Ross and Joey, like, we're all laughing at Ross for being like, just do it. But I think it's, like, one of those things that if you see someone doing it, you're like, it's not that big of a deal. But then if you try to do it yourself, you're like, this is really awkward and I don't want to do this.
Like, with Joey, you mean?
Yeah, like...
Yeah, I agree. I actually don't... I'm not laughing at Ross for not wanting to do it. Like, I don't think that's, like, a... Like, part... Of course, there's always going to be a toxic masculinity part to it. But mostly, I just feel like it's, like, a really awkward thing to like, practice dirty talking on someone who's, like, your platonic friend. You know? Like, and of course, there's, like, the added layer to, like, the, ha-ha, they're gay. Because that's always, like, the joke between the boys whenever they express any form of, like... non-manly manness. When Ross is like, turn around, I don't want you to look at me while I do this, like, that that feels like something I would do. Like, I'd be like, okay, if we are gonna do this, I don't want you looking in my eyes. This is too awkward.
I also really love, oh wow, that's a lot of rain. I really love Joey in this scenario and in this storyline, and just how he's really like inserting himself to be like emotional support for his friend.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, like, it's just such an interesting situation with Joey, right? Because he's so set in his, in being secure around his like masculinity. And if you don't, can't see me, I'm using air quotes here. And he's very wanting to support his friends and give them like confidence themselves as well. Like, he's really trying to like root for Ross and really help him like build up his confidence and like mm-hmm. doing things that like some people would find awkward, but he's just very like confident in himself and like that he feels okay doing it. But again, it's just this situation that we keep coming back to where,
yeah,
like Joey is that way, but part of that is rooted in the fact that he manipulates women and sleeps with women, and his masculinity, again, air quotes, is defined by how many like scores he has, again, air quotes. And so there's sort of like that, you know, he's like a master manipulator, but also the least homophobic of all of them and has the least like of certain types of toxic masculinity.
Yeah, I think the way that different men are raised with different levels of comfort around what it means to be like a man and what it means to be friendly or close with your man friends. Like, I know tons of men who feel really uncomfortable hugging other men.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see tons of other men who like are relatively homophobic but have no problem hugging men. You know what I mean? It's like different, like there's different mm-hmm. levels of comfort around what it means to like display affection as a man. And I think that it's not across the board. Like, you'll see some things that are like stereotypical homophobic things, but it's just like there's such this like cross between homophobic and sexist, like this, and they kind of layer in this very interesting way where it's like men don't want to be seen as gay, but worse than being seen as gay, they don't want to be seen as women. So it's like this,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
yeah, it's just a loaded, fun pack of shit. When I first saw this and like Chandler kind of sees them being like, you know, like dirty talking to each other or whatever, my first thought was like, ugh, Chandler, like, you know, like, of course, like the men are like gay, you know, like this kind of like joke about that. But honestly, I think that it would be funny to walk in on anyone doing this, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like,
sure.
It would just be like so hilarious to see any two friends who are like clearly platonic friends, like practicing dirty talk. And like, you just walk in on this one moment and you're just like, guys, what are you doing?
Especially Chandler, that just like feeds off of being like sarcastic and making fun of people in sort of like vulnerable situations. He walked in on basically like, you know, Dragon's Gold of this situation, where it's like he knows how uncomfortable Ross would be. And the way they film it too is so perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, the way he like walks out of his room and then you see him like between them. And anyway.
Yeah, totally. Do you have anything else to say about this particular plot line?
I really just wanted to say that Jan's outfit was on point.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And also Joey's outfit in this scene where he has like this shirt and then he has like a red shirt on top, like opened.
Yeah.
I really, really, really love this
outfit. Yeah, the striped shirt. We didn't put this as an option for best outfit.
I know, I'm very disappointed. I think this should win best outfit.
Wow, that's a bold
statement. Either him or Jan. Jan is like, has that like 90s like piratey look that was really in. Do you remember that?
She did not win. She was one of the lowest scoring ones.
Oh, really? Oh my God. Yeah. It's so funny because like that look is probably like when I was, you know, 13 or something, that's probably like the look that I wish I could pull off.
Wow. The black vest though. The vest, I've just never been into vests. Vests are just not my
love
vibe.
Vests. I've always loved vests. So good. Vests are great, guys. Go get yourself a gift.
I'm kidding.
Yep.
Well, you are.
Such a stereotype.
Okay, so the person who won best outfit is actually Rachel, who is wearing that like strappy black short dress that has like, that's the straps, and then she's wearing the long sleeve underneath it, which we talked about how this is like such a style.
Yeah, the spaghetti straps with like long sleeves or like shorts, any, well, basically any shirt underneath.
Yeah, so she won. And then also Chandler's blazer from the scene when he comes into the coffee house won second best outfit. It's top notch.
Yeah, looking sharp.
Then we get to the end. Basically, we find out that Ross did very well in his storyline around dirty talking, and he's gotten really good at dirty talking, et cetera, et cetera. And he says, I was the James Michener of dirty talk.
Emily, who is James Michener?
So James Michener is an American writer who's released more than 40 books. Thank you, interweb. Most of them are fictional and lengthy family sagas. So he's known for his research behind his books.
Family sagas?
Yeah, like about like families, okay. Whatever. And apparently the plots are full of detail. So I think that's what he's trying to say, is that he was like so good at dirty talk that there was like so much detail involved.
Right.
It's cute. I like Ross's sweater in this scene, in that last scene. And he goes around. Okay, this is something that's fun.
It wasn't too big on him is really what... Was that, like, literally the standard that we had?
No,
it's like, wow, Ross is wearing a sweater that fits him. Looks great.
No, because, like, I find that, like, how often do you see people on TV when they're, like, out and about wearing, like, a comfortable sweater like that? I don't know if that's very common.
Oh, is he wearing a hoodie in this?
Yeah, he's wearing, like, a Nike hoodie.
Right,
like,
yeah. Normally he's wearing these, like, fancy turtleneckies that are, like, big on him.
He's clearly very comfortable.
I recognize that the oversized style was the style of the 90s, but it still bothers me.
Also, you know what I thought of during this end scene where they're all sitting in the cafe talking about, like, Monica's thing, which we'll get into in a second, but, like, I just thought of, like, how absolutely wonderful it would be to just sit with friends in a cafe right now.
Ugh.
Pandemic life, yo. Okay, anyways, man, if anyone's, like, listening to this podcast in, like, 40 years, they're gonna be like, wow, remember that time we were all living in a pandemic? Moving on.
So then, well, Joey make sort of, again, so this is interesting. Again, we're expanding into Ross's perspective of relationships and Joey's perspective. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, like, Joey the entire time has been pushing for him to, like, have sex. And Ross's idea, like, he does want to have sex, I think possibly more because there's, like, a certain connotation to it. But also, you get, like, more of a... like look into what Ross wants for intimacy. Mm-hmm. And it's like for him, he cuddled with this person twice and he enjoyed that, you know, like, yeah. And I just find that that's nice because sex isn't necessarily intimacy. And I think that's more like, that's more Ross's game. He's more of a, like, a relationship person as opposed to Joey, who is just a sex person.
A quote unquote kills kind of person.
Ugh.
So let's get into the story, which the episode is actually named after, the one with the stone guy. Okay, so we have Monica, who's given this opportunity to basically be the head chef at a restaurant of Phoebe's massage therapy client's restaurant. The massage therapy client, Steve, is played by John Lovitz, who is, once he comes onto the screen, everyone cheers for him because he's like an iconic comedy actor. He's in like Rat Race, which is a hilarious movie. He's just done a lot of great things, I think.
After you're done talking, I want to say something. Sorry, I was just doing this so I didn't interrupt you.
Okay.
Which I clearly interrupted you.
Also, clearly, after I'm done talking, you're gonna talk. This is a podcast. But it...
Okay.
Anyways, I wrote something down in my notes, which I see that you have in your notes, so I'm gonna let you say it.
Go. Anywho, so what I think is very cute is the fact that Lisa Kudrow and John Lovitz. Actually are connected before the show. So they actually apparently go way back. Kudrow's brother was really good childhood friends with John Lovitz. And so apparently it was Lovitz's encouragement of Kudrow's like going after a comedic career that she actually did pursue it.
Did not know that.
But I just think it's cute because it's like
he
Lisa Kudrow wouldn't be on Friends if it wasn't for basically like him supporting her. I mean, let's not give him all the credit, but like But I just think it's cute. And then now they're on screen together. It just cute. Makes my heart glow.
So the thing that I was actually going to say that I thought you were going to say, which is that, so John Lovett's actually in this entire end, like in this entire scene where he's high, is he actually improvised a lot of his lines, apparently, which is really funny.
Which I could totally see that because he's a great comedian and yeah.
Okay, but let's first go in, before we get into that whole part, so let's settle the debate around whether or not Monica should have asked Wendy or Rachel to waitress. So our audience, 33% of them said that they should have picked, Monica should have picked Wendy, 67% said they Monica should have picked Rachel. What do you feel?
I feel like if this was between you and I, that you would have picked Wendy instead of me, and I would have picked you instead of Wendy.
Are we going back to the $10,000 thing? Okay, Quinn yesterday asked me what I would do if I won $60 million in the lottery, and I joked...
$60
million. Okay, $60 million, and I joked that I would only give Quinn $10,000, and then we proceeded to get into a very real argument, because Quinn was very upset that I would only give Zier $10,000, which is... ridiculous, because it's a hypothetical question, and obviously I would get... Okay, we're not getting into that now, but...
It wasn't a joke, guys. Everything was serious.
Okay. Moving on.
And I was insulted, because I said that I would give Emily millions of dollars.
Okay. Whatever. All right, we've been living in the same house for too long. Okay, for the record, yes, I would have picked Wendy over you.
I know you would. That's why I said it.
What kind of waitressing experience do you have? Waitering experience do you have?
I worked in
restaurants. You were a waiter?
So, okay. F you.
Okay.
See? Well, again, Emily would choose Wendy instead of me.
Okay, I actually don't know if I would choose Wendy instead of you. I just wanted to bother you. But honestly, I think that, like, my anxiety would make me not want to pick anyone except for, like, someone who was, like, super, super professional pro that I knew from, like, my fancy restaurant. Because Monica works at, like, a very fancy restaurant, whereas where Rachel works is, like, pretty much just, like, a coffee house. Like, it's just a very different style of waitressing or waiter... what's the term? Waitressing? Waitering?
Serving.
Serving. And then I realized it. Because waitering sounds weird, but waitressing doesn't, which makes me think that, like, we really have terms around feminine people doing this role.
Yeah, totally.
Anyways, okay, so serving. Yeah, so I guess, like, I totally understand Monica's, like, wanting to pick someone who she knows is, like, highly professional, who can do it, because she, like, really wants this head chef job. So I get that, but, like, it's just kind of, like, one of those... you know, that's pretty mean sort of thing. And also, she then ends up offering her $20 an hour.
Okay, yeah. So this is the part of the scene that I absolutely love, or the part of the storyline. So when, you know, Rachel is first insulted that Monica chose to hire and pay someone else really well to do this job that Rachel feels that she is completely capable of. And then later down the line, when Wendy ends up bailing on Monica, this is the first
which
time...
which is not professional.
No, it's not. Record, which means that Monica was wrong.
And Rachel got mega vindication.
Yes, totally. But this is, like, such an interesting point, because this is one of the first times that we see an aspect of Rachel that I respect and love, and I think makes her one of the best female role models on the show. Mm. And this is when... she does not believe that she owes anyone anything when they have been, like, when they have done something for her. And that she instead comes up from a point of, like, I deserve your respect and I'm allowed to either be angry at you for whatever, no matter how nice you have been to me in the past.
Yeah, it is pretty manipulative of Monica to, like, use the fact that she supported her, like, 6 or 7 months ago into, like, and then now use that against her to, like, manipulate her into helping her. Like, it's, yeah, that's pretty...
I mean, like, I don't think... it's, like, she's partly saying it. You can tell it's, like, out of desperation or whatnot. Like, I definitely know that me as someone who has, like, had to, like, unpack this part of myself for a long time. And I feel like a lot of, like, people raised as, like, femme folk have internalized this concept that, like... that if someone does something nice, then you owe them something.
Yeah.
And I just feel like like Rachel is the opposite of that. And I think that's such a respectable aspect of her character. And this gets demonstrated more and more over time, especially in relationships that happen, which I think makes her a really healthy role model.
I'm gonna flip the coin on its head or whatever the expression is. I agree with you, especially when it comes to her relationships, like 100% on board. I don't know, though, if her doing this in this situation is out of her, like, being like, no, I deserve to be treated better, or her just being, like, really petty. And, like, also, I would like to bring up the concept that, like, she was raised with, like, servants and maids and not having to do anything on her own. To me, I think that her being like, screw you, Monica, is a little bit based on her understanding of, like, I don't know, like, a little bit based on classism. Like, this kind of feeling that, like, I can, you know, like, whatever, I don't care. You know, like, you figure it out. Like, this kind of, like, it's not based on this, like, community bond and, like, this, like, supporting each other in a friendship kind of way. I don't know.
Right. I mean, I don't disagree with you on that, mm-hmm. but I definitely think in this moment, I am totally fine with her being petty.
I'm 100% for pettiness. Don't get me wrong. I think that pettiness to a degree in which it doesn't harm anyone is like totally acceptable. And I don't think like Monica would be harmed if Monica was so comfortably able to be like, yeah, whatever, I'll give you $20 an hour. Like that's, you know, whatever. It's like, it's fine. If she gets the job, she's gonna be making way more money than Rachel would be making. So it's like, it's a way of investing into your job, I guess, quote unquote, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, it also feels like, I don't know. It's just a weird scenario. Okay, so then she does basically hire Rachel to do this job.
Did you calculate how much she was making in comparison to minimum wage?
Basically, minimum wage in 1995 was $4.75 an hour. And so she offered her $20. So it's like four times the amount of money that she would normally be making at the coffee house, which is like unreal. That's like, you know, minimum wage right now is, you know, depending on where you are, but in Quebec it's $13 an hour. So imagine getting $13 an hour.
Yeah.
So then John Lovitz arrives. The studio audience goes wild.
Which apparently is in future they decided to basically present him to the audience first and then do another take afterwards. Because apparently it got to be, like, they were cheering too much for him and it was, like, a problem.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
I know, eh?
So John Lovitz shows up. Monica's created this, like, really, really nice meal that's obviously very Monica of her. has amuse-bouche.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's, like, the point of the evening, right?
Yeah. It turns out that John Lovitz, a.k.a. Steve, is high.
I love the way that Phoebe pulls Rachel into the kitchen, like, with so much urgency. And is like, he smoked. What, she lit
lit a doobie in the cat. Which also, if I think about it, unless those windows were open and John Lovitz was blowing out the window, Phoebe's high too.
I totally thought the same thing every time I see this.
That's so funny.
Because you're definitely hotboxing the cab otherwise.
Yeah, also, that cab driver would be pissed. I don't know how you smoke a, how do you smoke a joint in a cab?
I feel like this is like, let's not poke holes in this.
Okay, yeah, sure. Great.
Clearly there's lots of holes.
Okay. I guess in the 90s you could smoke in the back of taxis.
Right.
Because there's that little window thing. So people would smoke in the back of the taxi.
Right. Right. There's different smoking laws. Yeah. Because as we discovered when Chandler smoked in the cafe, you're allowed to smoke in
places. So I guess you could still smoke in cabs. Anyways, we didn't look that up. Doesn't matter.
Okay. I feel like I just need to I have no real way to segue into this, but just because we're in a predominantly white show with a predominantly white cast, and we're talking about drugs and making light of it. And I think that we have to point out the fact that this, like this, the stigma that exists around drugs and people of color is very real. And I guess I just don't, I feel like we have to like acknowledge that at this point.
Yeah. I think that like, I think that this would be a very... I would feel very differently about this whole scene if, like, Steve was a black actor. And they had had this guy come in who was a black actor who got stoned for this professional meeting. To me, it would make me think a lot about, like, how we have stereotypes around certain races. I think it's just important to point out that, like, the ways in which we negotiate people being stoned on television is often, like, very black and white, excuse the pun,
but like an actual sense,
you know? Yeah. So, like, often when it is non, like, dark-skinned characters who are smoking, it's, like, humorous, it's a joke, it's funny. You see it all the time. Whereas when it is dark-skinned actors who are smoking, it's, like, a crime. It's wrong. It's bad.
Exactly.
So I think that, like, anyways, all that to say, let's throw out a little bit of stats because it's really important to talk about why this is a problem. So 40% of drug arrests in the States in 2018 were marijuana charges. And if you are a Black American, you are 4 to 8 times more likely to be arrested for pot than white Americans, despite the fact, and people will say, well, that's because Black people smoke more weed. Actually, white people smoke more weed. Fun fact. So, yeah. Also, states waste approximately $3.6 billion per year solely on marijuana busts. Individual states, not like the states. Individual states.
Yeah. And I think, so, Emily, I'm so glad you looked up these stats, first of all. So I think it's, like, really important for us to put this into context because even though we're not, like, consciously linking these things, it's important to recognize that there is a certain amount of subconscious stigma that we have while watching any sort of information or, like, characters or even if it's fiction around drugs. And I think that it is especially a needed topic to talk about because the war on drugs in the US was, or it still is a big thing, but also was a really big thing at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that, so I want to recommend the documentary, The House I Live In, which is a 2012 documentary. And pieces of information, like from the documentary, The House I Live In, is also in the documentary 13th, which we talked about in an earlier episode. But essentially, it just talks about how the war on drugs was not actually about drugs, but essentially a whole ploy of propaganda that was meant to target Black people specifically and Latino folks as well, essentially to incarcerate. And then in tandem, if you watch 13th, you'll understand that that essentially leads to modern day slavery. And so I think that is important to understand when we see any sort of drugs portrayed to us in any context in media, especially if it's just like for fun or we're talking about, like, you know, Black folks that are criminals doing drugs, you know, like we have to recognize, like, what is the greater context and recognize that people of color are not doing drugs at a higher rate than white people. It's just the way that it has been framed in the media
and portrayed on the media,
and
yeah,
used as a tool in order to incarcerate people of color, incarcerate and control communities of Black folks and Latino folks and
Indigenous people too.
Indigenous people intensely as well. Yeah. I will say that I think that 13th is, like, definitely, you watch this documentary even more so. It's more relevant to now because it's more recently let out. It gives a little bit more of a fuller picture of what's happening in the States around this 13th Amendment that has caused essentially modern day slavery. And The House I Live In is really goes more into detail into certain aspects of what they talk about in 13th. Yeah.
Great.
Okay.
So even though we talk about all these things and the seriousness about this, this scene is really hilarious.
This is, I think everyone does such a good job in this scene.
Yeah. Like that moment where Rachel's like, he's high. Like, he smoked. And she's like imitating smoking a joint. And then Monica's like, no. And then he's like, ooh, taco shell. Like, See? Like, she, like, puts her hand out and she's like, see? Clearly.
Oh, my God. So it's good. So good.
And but I do have to say, I don't think I've ever been this kind of high where you're, like, completely, like, he doesn't seem high off weed. Like, he seems like he's, like, on a whole different planet. Like, I don't know.
He really is. No, and, okay, so that's, like, another half of kind of what I wanted to bring up in this is that, like, it's just such a stereotype of weed. Like, I do think that the scene is beautifully executed. But there's just, like, I also want to say that lots of people are high all the time and you can never tell.
Yeah.
You know, like, so this character, Steve, does actually show up later on in other seasons. And I think in season 9. And it's, like, very clear that he is a train wreck of a person. And so it's just sort of like, yeah, I guess it makes sense that this character would not just, like, get high, but, like, get totaled, where right. you are literally barely human anymore.
Yeah.
Also, the whole scenario with the gummy bears and the soup and then him throwing the sugar rolls.
Yeah, I feel so bad for Monica. Like, what are you doing just standing there? Call 911. Here, guys, hold on to a sugar roll. So good. It's like a lifeboat.
Yeah, it's very clever. Very well done. Okay, there's this one aspect of the scene where Monica says, but we'll have tartlets in, like, what, 4.5 minutes? And the scene doesn't take 4.5 minutes, but then at the end of it, a little ding goes off and the tartlets are ready. Which normally is, like, this pet peeve that I have in shows when, like, they don't actually follow the timeline that they say that they're following. But I will say that this is, like, a scene where I think it's perfectly crafted enough that it doesn't matter. Does it bother you still?
It bothers me.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because she was like, they'll be ready in 9 minutes. And then she's like, you couldn't wait 4.5 minutes. And it was like, not...
Right.
It couldn't have gone from 9 minutes to 4.5 minutes to 0
in 30
minutes
seconds.
In, like,
that's not how time
works. In, like,
works.
A 4 minute scene. And it's not like there's, like, anything cut to indicate that, like, it's been any shorter amount of time. Like, they just, like, just did not know her timer, maybe.
I kind of wonder if there was, like, an original plan to, like, to cut. Anyway, so the swing switches over and we're in the cafe at this point. Mm-hmm. And Monica's, like, lying down in her brother's arms as he's, like, trying to comfort her. And in the DVD, it has an elongated version of the scene. And yeah, you find out what actually happens to Steve.
Yeah.
Emily, do you want
to? They had to leave him in the emergency room because he tried to eat a magnet. Which is so good.
So if you don't have access to the DVD, go to your local library, pick it up, and take a... It's a pretty funny little scene.
Your local library. But also, I think that it's interesting because there's also a line from Rachel here, which ties back into the whole Rachel Monica thing, where Rachel goes, so am I going to get paid for the full 3 hours? And then she's like, never mind, we'll talk about it later. But, like, it's an awkward thing when you tell someone you're going to pay them for their time and they're your friend. And then there's, like, this weird power dynamic between the money things because Monica definitely makes more money than Rachel. And so it's just, like, there's just this whole weird thing.
But I just love how Rachel's just so, like, straightforward about it, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Not a very tactful time to bring it up.
Not very tactful, no.
But I think it's funny. Mm. And this is a part of Rachel that I love.
If you tell someone you're going to pay them for your time, you got to pay them for their time.
Exactly.
But also, if you're a friend and just witness your friend go through that, you can also be, you know, a little bit more chill about it.
So then we end up with two different kind of endings. We have where they're deciding to go out to a movie and then they're waiting on Chandler, who is back at the office yelling at someone because he doesn't like the weenus.
Yeah.
The weekly looking at the weenus.
And I'm not happy.
Which I just think is, like, the way that it ends for him is just hilarious. But then the very ending, which is where my beef comes in, is we get a nice little scene into Phoebe. And you guys, moving forward, I'm just going to start being a little bit more transparent with how I feel about Phoebe and her massage therapy. And I don't really mean to come across as, like, a pretentious asshole, but... You don't massage with sleeves. It just, first of all, it's unsanitary. Second of all, you would ruin your clothing because of the massage oil. And third of all, just, it doesn't make sense.
It wouldn't feel good. It wouldn't feel good if, like, someone was, like, rubbing me with their, like, cotton cloth sleeves.
Yeah. You wear short sleeves, massage, you use everything from your fingertips all the way up to, like, your elbow. So you wear short sleeves. Anyway, it just really bothers me. Phoebe is a horrible massage therapist, You know, she gives all massage therapy a bad name.
Wow, that's a big line.
She's really bad at her job. Don't ever think that a massage is what Phoebe does. Period.
All right.
Okay.
Anyways.
I'm done.
If you want a good massage, head over to Quinn's YouTube channel.
Massage people on my YouTube channel.
I don't know why I said that. All right. So I think that's it for today.
Again, don't forget, go over to our Apple Podcast. You can just type in the name of What the Phalange. You leave us a written review, and then you go over to our Instagram, and each friend that you comment will be an entry in to win one of three prizes.
Ba-ba-ba. So head over to our Instagram if you want all the details about that, or send us a DM on Instagram. Don't forget to hit subscribe down below if you're watching on our YouTube.
And don't forget, if you want a season two, support. We need you.
We need you.
I made that up right there. I just made that up.
It rhymed. I get it.
Yeah.
Okay, my name is Emily. You can find me on my Instagram, EmilyBYoga, or on my website, EmilyBYoga.com. That's Emily with an I-E, not a Y.
And if you want to follow me, you can just go Quinn K. Brunet, any platform, as well as QuinnKBrunet.com. You can find links to our personal YouTube channels on the screen right now if you're on YouTube, and otherwise find us in the show notes.
Have a wonderful day.
And keep deconstructing and diversifying the media you consume. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the Phalange. If you're picking up what we're putting down, please consider supporting us on Patreon, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and or sharing us with all of your friends on social media.
You can find us at whatthephalangepodcast.com, email us at wtphalange@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at WTPhalangePod, or follow us on Instagram at WTPhalangePodcast. All links will be included in the show notes below.
Want to get in touch with us each individually? You can find Emily on Twitter as EmilyB__, and that's Emily with an IE.
And you can find Quinn at TheBasicNB on Instagram. Keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.